Hello, everybody. Dr. Ben Edwards here with another great episode of You're the Cure. Thank you for tuning in today. We've got a special guest. I'm super excited to have Dr. Mark McDonald, MD, out of Los Angeles, born and raised in Los Angeles and practices there now. And I was trying to remember when I first heard about Dr. Mark McDonald, and I think it was right before I was asked to testify at the local school board meeting. this past summer, and I thought we were past the mask issue, and I had a patient call me up. It was late one afternoon, said, hey, the school board's meeting at 7 a.m. Can you talk to bring the truth regarding mask? I said, sure, fine. And so I was a late sign up, and once I got on the docket, I saw, oh, there's three other doctors ahead of me. So I thought, oh, great. So there's four of us, you know, we'll all speak the truth on this and it'll be a slam dunk. No problem. This is such old news. I mean, the science is settled. And anyways, those three doctors before me were on the exact opposite, had an opposite opinion. And I was just scratching my head, but I quoted you. I'd heard you testify or give a speech or something, but anyways, use some of your quotes. So thank you for what you've been doing. So let me intro you a little bit or let you introduce yourself. So we've got Dr. Mark McDonald here because he wrote a book that intrigued me when I saw the title, United States of Fear, How America Fell Victim to a Mass Delusional Psychosis. I made a statement early on in the pandemic. I don't remember if it was March or April or when early on. And before, you know, maybe we really knew what was going on. But I knew 100%, well, I only knew one thing 100%, and that was that fear was overcoming everyone and fear was going to do nothing positive. Fear shuts our immune system down, shuts our gastrointestinal tract down, shuts our hormone production down. This fear and fight or flight and cortisol surge, it is nothing but negative. And so from the get-go, I was preaching, let's deal with this fear. Senator Bob Hall, Texas State Senator, asked me to testify at the Texas Senate this summer, and I got to speak to the spirit of fear at that during that testimony too. So everyone that's listened to me knows I'm a pretty big proponent of coming against this fear. So when I saw your book, I just thought, man, I got to read that, and it's so awesome he's doing that he's written this book and had to get you on the podcast. So thank you, Dr. McDonald, for being here today.
Thanks, Ben. Yeah, United States of Fear is my book that came out in November, and it's really taken off. It hit the top 100 after my Dr. Joseph Mercola interview a few weeks ago and moved up to number 56 at its peak. It keeps hovering in that range of about 50 to 150. So I'm very grateful for the positive reception. It's all grassroots. It's from people like you and others that have interviewed me and posted my thoughts. And it's really resonated with a lot of Americans who are frustrated, fearful, tired, confused, and they're looking for something that clarifies what I see as really this insanity that's really gripped our country the last couple of years, and to understand how it came to be. And now in 2022, as we look towards, I hope, a way out, how to recover from fear, which is going to be my next book that I hope to publish by Easter, a 12-step program on how to recover from the fear addiction, which I do believe it has become. We've moved from a crisis, a panic, a fear, to a kind of sustained fear, which becomes traumatic, to compliance. And now I would have to say what we're in now is really a kind of chronic addiction to fear, in the same way that drug dealers and their buyers have this sick relationship. Americans have developed a sick relationship between fear and media, fear and government, fear and corporations. Those three groups, corporations, media, and government, have really colluded together, in my view, to push this drug onto the American population. And because it's so hard to get away from those three, especially media, the Americans just keep going back to the source, and they just keep getting another shot in the arm. And many don't like it, they don't want it, but they just don't know how to break the habit. And so I'm going to try to help with that with my next publication. Now that I think it's clear what's happening and why people are afraid, what are we going to do about it?
Right. Well, that's exciting. Can't wait to read that one too. Let's back up a little bit and you know, how does a child psychiatrist practicing out in Los Angeles, how do you become, I consider you one of the pillars of COVID truth, standing up, you know, like Dr. McCullough we've had on the show before and others, you know, walk us through what you were doing prior to this in your practice, and then how you started to see the light, see the truth through this. So take us back maybe to early 2020.
Well, I've always been a very private psychiatrist and physician. I was working as an analyst in training for a number of years, doing my own analysis and seeing analytic training patients, doing individual couples and family therapy. I really didn't want my personal views of the world beyond psychiatry and psychology, certainly not politics, to enter into my work. I live in Los Angeles, California, where I run a private practice. Many people in Los Angeles, we call themselves liberals. There are leftists here as well. There are some conservatives who are fairly quiet, very, very few people that are religiously affiliated except the Orthodox Jewish community in the city itself. So it's a rather secular, rather liberal or left-leaning crowd. Many people work in entertainment. And I would say they're pretty indoctrinated, really, with views that I think are contrary to reality, that just don't really live up to the test of, does this actually work in the world? And that's true with relationships. It's true with eating. It's true with emotions, politics, religion, everything. So I've been very quiet because I don't want to get in the middle of that conversation that is not really central to why they're there. However, what I started to see in my practice in March, April, May of 2020 was just, in my experience, an unheard of, a never seen before, utter collapse of a large percentage of my patient population, primarily children, anxiety, depression, obsessive compulsive disorders, cutting, drugs, suicidal thoughts, expressions, actions, hospitalizations. This was really not something I had seen before in private practice. I had seen that in individuals in inpatient units and under extreme stress. But to have high functioning outpatient families and children just fall apart out of nowhere was really not something that I was expecting, and I couldn't really follow or understand. And so I started doing research. I started looking around to people in my city and reading more news and talking to patients and parents to understand what was happening. And what I discovered was that by and large, people were living in a state of terror, and it was completely unfounded. There was absolutely no reason to be experiencing this level of distress. I understand that for a couple of weeks in early March, people were kind of confused. There's this virus. What does it mean? A lot of old people in nursing homes are dying. But we knew by the third or fourth week that we were not in a medical crisis. This was never a viral crisis in medical. It was really a psychological pandemic, and the fear that was largely driving the government decisions and private business decisions was so irrational and so unexplainable that I had to understand for myself as a professional and as a citizen, as a community member, what went wrong. And so I started to speak out. I started to join with other physicians traveling, went to Washington, D.C., first to talk about school closures and masking of kids and how this is just reprehensible and abusive and uncalled for. And then, of course, moving further into denial of treatment options, which has been an utter catastrophe in this country and around the world. And then finally, more recently, with this never-ending march towards universal, repeated vaccination, which is not even accurately described. It's really a sort of a perpetual revolving door of drug treatment through injections. And I think with every passing step, I became more and more clear in my own mind and more convinced that we were all being lied to, and that there was a power structure that was really leading a narrative that was harming the country. And I just couldn't stay silent. So I began to take action and I began to write. Started writing my book and eventually started a Substack account more recently to try to inform people on what I believe to be truthful and to then let them make their own decisions. I've always told my patients, I'm not going to tell you what to think or what to do. I'm going to give you information. I'm going to advise you. But ultimately, you have to think for yourself. Because once you're out in the world, I'm not going to be there whispering in your ear. You have to be independent in your mind and take accountability for your decisions. So I've been fighting against this citizen dependency for now for a couple of years, in the same way that I try to encourage patients to be independent in their lives, to be growing and moving and evolving away from their parents and not acting like small children. I've been trying to inspire that sense of autonomy in adults as well. And it's really filled a lot of my non-clinical hours and time in another way than I had ever expected. Become a public figure. I've become fairly well sought after as a speaker and as a writer. And none of it was planned. None of it was organized. It was just something that I followed because I thought it was important. And I've lost patients. Some of my patients have left the practice, but in recompense, I've received an enormous number of new patients who are more aligned with my own values. And I've also met a lot of great colleagues and individual, regular, everyday folks in the United States who have learned of me and come to my side and offered to support me. So it's been a very positive experience for me and one that has confirmed my suspicions early on that when you come out of the closet, so to speak, as a clear, rational, thoughtful, and an honest person, which is what I strive to be, you do make some enemies because I think that's unavoidable, but you also bring wonderful people into your life that you would never have met otherwise. So I'm not regretful at all for what I did and the decisions that I made.
Well, and we're so grateful and thankful that you've made that decision to think clearly and to be vocal about it. It's really impacted a lot of lives.
Thank you.
Here locally, for sure. I've quoted you so much and shared your stuff. Let me ask you, I mean, Dr. McCullough says, I don't know how accurate this is. I think he's just sort of guessing, but about 500 physicians in the entire country are trying to take care of the whole country as far as treating COVID, and a million doctors sitting on the sideline is kind of his famous quote. But why do, you know, you saw clearly and then you came out of the closet, mm-hmm. even in a community that was, it's hard to do. Why is it, in your opinion, that so many medical professionals, these are supposed to be very bright, critical thinkers, mm-hmm. or maybe not critical. I thought we were critical thinkers as medical professionals, but, and I've tried to think, well, I mean, it's maybe financial that if they say anything, they get fired, they don't have a paycheck, but it's something beyond that. It's more than that. And so many of them, even in my own close circles, including family, just a complete and utter, I've even had some call me dangerous for promoting an anti-fear message and an early treatment message that I'm dangerous. And I've been reported to the medical board too. It was dismissed. But so many doctors, I mean, what are your thoughts on this? Why so many doctors have missed it and still are missing it?
Yeah. This has been one of the most disappointing and distressing aspects of my learning in the last couple of years. About 80-90% of my colleagues are in this way completely lost and unable to think clearly and rationally. Many of them are scared. Those who aren't scared are simply ignorant and naive. I think there's a few explanations for it. I can certainly tell you what it's not due to. It's not due to stupidity. Doctors, attorneys, business professionals, they have a lot of education. They're quite bright, and they have fallen for this far harder, actually, than many people who are less educated or less intelligent. I believe that to a large degree, the groupthink, the sheep-like mentality of the professional organizations is to blame. Doctors are now, very recently, they've been trained to follow dictates that come on from high, and those could be from their hospital, from their group practice leader, from a corporation that they're employed by, certainly from the AMA, the American Academy of Pediatrics. These organizations both professional organizations and also business organizations that drive policies, treatment algorithms, what you should and shouldn't do as a doctor, very, very powerful, both for reasons of money, reasons of licensure, and also just the social pressure, social professional pressure that doctors are under to not stand out, to not do something different, to not be an outlier, essentially. And when you go up against the government, the FDA, the CDC, and then some of these organizations like the AMA or the head of Kaiser, the head of UCLA, or Cedars-Sinai Hospital, you make yourself a target. And most doctors are not very courageous people. They're very risk averse, and they don't want to put themselves out there as being different and challenging the status quo. So a lot of them have either remained silent, they've quietly gone along with these inhumane policies, or they've just done the opposite. They kind of jumped right on board with them and said, these are just great. I can't imagine how somebody could disagree. Almost like a Lord of the Flies kind of mentality, where the weak become prey to the strong, and there's a revelry and a pleasure really being taken in going after and beating up doctors who speak up, because it brings you a greater sense of group presence and group membership. And there's also a bit of sadism, I think, involved as well. I've noticed a lot of physicians and even nursing staff have expressed a lot of cruelty towards their colleagues and towards their patients, which I was surprised by. I didn't think that would happen, and yet it has. So there's a lot of different factors. I can't give you one specific answer on why it's happened to the medical profession, but I can say clearly that I have lost confidence in the medical profession, and I no longer trust it as an entity. I only trust individual physicians, and I certainly don't trust hospitals or larger organizations.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I would have to concur with that. And the stories, I mean, we could go on and on about stories that patients have told me that these institutions have just treated them awful. Let's shift a little bit. If, say, you were going to try it, well, number one, would you advise trying this? But number two, if the answer is yes, or even maybe, if you were going to approach a colleague or just a citizen, someone with evidence, let's say about mask or early treatment, or is there a process from a psychiatrist, you know, from an intellectual biochemical standpoint that you might want to try to, I guess you would say, wake someone up or introduce some thoughts that they're opposite, you know, their current thinking is opposite of? How would you go about doing that? Or do you just steer clear?
I've received this question very frequently, and it's a very important one. And my answer has evolved over time. I have recently come to conclude that before you offer information to somebody, before you try to change someone's mind, you need to make an assessment of how open that person is to change. When I was in medical school, I took a course called motivational interviewing, which essentially gave the doctor a roadmap on how to approach patients who were addicted to tobacco. And obviously smoking is a huge cause of medical injury over time, cardiovascular disease, lung disease, cancer. But when you tell a patient you should stop smoking because you're going to kill yourself, and here's why, they generally are not very open to hearing that. And they often get very defensive, and they see you as an enemy, or at least as a nag. So what we were taught was, before you go and offer information and advice, ask the person, why do you smoke? What is it do you enjoy about the smoking? And is there anything you don't like about the smoking? Express some interest and curiosity on where that person is at that moment. And if the patient says, well, you know, I like smoking because it makes me relax. It's not really anything I have against it. I mean, it costs a little bit of money, but, you know, I make pretty good hourly wage. I don't mind that. I think it's really a pretty good thing for me. Then you just stop the conversation. You say, oh, thanks, and you move on. And then the next visit, you ask the same question. And maybe this time you'll get a different answer. Maybe the answer will be, well, I used to really find it's relaxing, but now I'm just nervous all the time unless I take the cigarette. My hands are constantly shaking. I wake up in the morning and I feel sick. And I also can't stand this cough. I can't even play soccer anymore. I'm getting tired and winded, and I really used to like exercise, and now I just don't want to do it. I'm getting fat. It's the result of it. I'm watching television. It's awful. Now you have an opening. Now you can say, really? Wow, that doesn't sound good at all. Would you like some more information about some of these problems you just brought up so you can get an idea of how serious this is? Because it sounds like you're aware that you're having some health problems. Yeah, I'd like to do that. Okay, here you go. And by the way, what do you think about the idea of maybe putting this on a hiatus, stopping the smoking? Is that something you've thought about? And if the person says, oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't know how to do it, though. You say, well, let me help. This is the kind of conversation that you have with smoking patients, and it's very successful. This is the way that I think people should evaluate the fearful and the misinformed. First, you have to understand where they are. If the person says, God, I'm really scared. I don't know what's going on. I wish I could figure this out. You say, really? Well, have you heard of this? Have you heard of that? Are you aware of some of the information of the following X, Y, and Z? And if the person says, yes, I am curious about that, then you can provide the information to them. But if somebody says to you, oh my gosh, like this guy in the elevator did to me the other day, how are you doing with the storm? I said, storm? It's been pretty sunny here recently. No. The viral storm, it's everywhere. He's got this, you know, giant N95 mask on his face. I said, huh, you mean the cold that's been going around? Oh, no, it's not a cold. I have a lot of people that have gotten really sick. People are dying from this. It's terrible. I said, oh, well, it doesn't really bother me too much. I'm not wearing a mask. I'm fine. I've been traveling, hugging people, taking supplements. I'm doing just great. Well, I don't understand how you can be so careless. And he got in this awful, you know, awful tone with me. There's no point in talking to this man any longer. There's no point in giving him information. He's closed off. He's fearful. He's not curious. On the other hand, when you hear curiosity, when you hear, even if it's mixed with fear, a sort of an interest in understanding what's going on, I think then you have an opening and you can talk to somebody and you can offer information and challenge them. But if you don't do that assessment, if you just keep bombarding people with information, it's not likely to land. And it's probably just going to make you feel frustrated and it's going to make the other person upset. And you're going to wind up creating more friction in the relationship. So I don't really recommend that. A blind going after people anymore. I used to, and now I don't bother. I do an assessment first, and then I make my decision based on that.
Yeah, good advice. And I really know that, but part of me, you know, that competitive spirit and that drive.
I understand the right urge, believe
pride
me.
And all that. Yeah, it's difficult. But at the end of the day, yeah. I mean, understand when fear comes in, it just changes people's thinking. There's no doubt about it. I mean, to their core. And like you said, when it's media, corporations, and government, I mean, when it's these leaders that we maybe the public kind of used to trust or still does, you know, doctors for sure. I mean, we were probably the most trusted group of professionals out there. And when you're constantly just receiving this fear coming in, you know, I can't say what I would have done if I wasn't a physician, didn't know the truth.
Yes. But,
so can't be too hard on them. But at this point, yes. I mean, we're 2 years in and so much is obvious. I mean, even just what Project Veritas put out yesterday or day before on what Fauci knew, and they knew ivermectin worked, and of course the gain of function, just there's so much evidence now that I know a lot of my patients and listeners who have been tuned into the truth for a while, they're so frustrated. So, you know, thanks for answering that question. That might help them to just take a deep breath when you're in that elevator with somebody. And just, you don't got to convince the world. We're not going to convince the world. All right. This might be a good time to take a break, everybody. We're with Dr. Mark McDonald, psychiatrist out in Los Angeles. Dr. McDonald, what's the best way for people to follow you? You mentioned Substack, but websites or social media, what's the best way to find you?
Yes. Well, I'm expecting my Twitter account to be deactivated at any moment, as it was with Robert Malone a couple of weeks ago. I may switch over to Getter. I haven't decided yet. But for now, you can find me on Twitter at M McDonald MD. That stands for Mark McDonald MD, M McDonald MD. But most of what I'm writing about now is actually on my new website, dissidentmd.com, D-I-S-S-I-D-E-N-T for dissenting view, dissidentmd.com. And my Substack account is called Dissident MD as well. So you can go to Substack and either type my name, Mark McDonald, or Dissident MD, and it'll pop up and you can subscribe to that Substack where I publish mini pieces on psychology, psychiatry, and politics about once a week. I'm going to publish another one tomorrow. So that's where I would recommend people go right now.
Okay, awesome. So I encourage everybody to go check that out and get the book too, United States of Fear, How America Fell Victim to a Mass Delusional Psychosis. Again, that's Dr. Mark McDonald, MD. Y'all stick with us. I am Ben Edwards. We will be right back with Dr. Mark McDonald. Okay, everybody, we're back. Dr. Ben Edwards here, another great episode of You're the Cure. Just to remind you, this show will be archived at our website, veritasmedical.com. It will also be out on podcast on iTunes. So y'all share that with your friends and your family, coworkers, anyone you love, really. We were here with Dr. Mark McDonald, his book, The United States of Fear, How America Fell Victim to a Mass Delusional Psychosis. He's coming out with another book, so y'all be looking for that around Easter, 12 Steps to what's the title going to be, Dr. McDonald? Have you figured that out?
We have a tentative title. It's right now it's looking like it'll be Freedom from Fear,
Freedom
a 12-step program to individual and national recovery.
Oh, awesome. So y'all keep an eye out for that. Let's dive right back in here. I want to shift to the children in particular. I've got 6 kids, age 18 down to 4 years old. I love kids. Who doesn't love kids? I know there's some crazy psychos out there, but I know we all have kids' best interests at heart for the most part. I mean, locally for sure, like at the school board meeting, there are plenty of people wanting to keep the mask and social distancing. And there's been talk about, not lately, but you know, at-home learning, Zoom, of course, the COVID shot, that's a whole nother subject. But just back to the basics. This thing started out so hardcore on these kiddos to let's separate them, let's mask them, even to this day, not here locally, but I know around the country, masks are such an issue. So even though this seems like we might be retreading old stuff, it's still a problem. So from your perspective, what were you seeing maybe in your practice or just observation in the community or through the media and stuff early on and then throughout the pandemic? And even address or masking for viral illnesses, is it beneficial at all for these kids? So some of the historical, what you saw, but then get into the details of what is beneficial and what's not. What does the science say?
Well, this is really not a very complex subject when you boil it down. Wearing masks is of absolutely no utility outside of a surgical suite or a hospital setting. There is, as of today, there is not a single in vivo, meaning in practice, study that is peer-reviewed and accepted as being truthful and accurate that shows a benefit for anyone wearing masks, either indoors or outdoors, to prevent against the transmission of viral respiratory illness. It doesn't exist. It was all theoretical. It was all based on a misunderstanding of how doctors and surgeons wear masks, which are primarily to reduce the transmission of body fluids, doctors coughing into wounds and things splashing from patients into doctors' faces. That's really what they're for. They're not meant to restrict airflow and to filter air, with some very rare exceptions in very highly controlled settings. So masks have unfortunately become nothing other than two things. They've become walking billboards of fear. In other words, when you see a mask, it says, I am afraid, you should be afraid too. And if you've forgotten, I'm going to remind you by showing you this mask on my face. And the second is they become virtue signaling statements. Many people now are wearing sequined masks. They are putting a little cover-up scarves over their faces, very similar to what you see in the Middle East, actually, with women who are oppressed. They will display their beauty and their uniqueness by very shiny, glittery, expensive head coverings and other co-opting, really, of the facial coverings to make them stand out. and to show off their beauty. This is what women are doing here in the United States. Men as well are making political statements with masks. Most of these masks are not made of medical material at all. Many of them are made out of stocking, sequins, cloth, silk. They serve no medical utility whatsoever. Those are the only two functions of masks that I'm aware of today. Unfortunately, for children, it's been a devastating, abusive practice by adults who have foisted their anxiety and fear onto children and used children really as a kind of offloading point to make themselves feel better. This is really unfortunate because parents are really responsible for their safety and welfare of their children. Adults are responsible for children as a society, and we've really let them down. We've let them down by shutting down schools, by keeping them away from their friends, by preventing them from participating in activities after school, as well as by covering up their faces with these filthy diapers, which are simply spreading disease, streptococcal infections of the throat, conjunctivitis of the eyes, impetigo on the face, difficulties with breathing, deoxygenation, high CO2 levels. These are all very well known and established problems with these things. But in addition to that, as a psychiatrist, I see an enormous psychological harm caused by these masks. I have a lot of autistic children, children who are unable to read facial expressions, difficulties with hearing or speaking, and they're just devastated. Some of them have been hospitalized because of their frustrations with either being forced to wear one or not being able to see other people's expressions and be able to understand how people are feeling around them or to hear anything, because people are muffled all the time. And these are kids that are already suffering, already struggling, and now they're just drowning. And then you look at regular kids in schools, kids are going to French and English and Spanish classes, and they can't even see the lips of their teachers. So they can't even reproduce the sounds they're supposed to learn. They can't hear things very well because of the muffling. They are playing sports, running around with masks on, causing them to become lightheaded and sometimes pass out. It's very, very hard to understand how any adult, certainly an adult with a child, could ever have accepted that covering up a child's face is something that is beneficial medically or psychologically. It's sort of baffling to me that this was ever done, and it's almost impossible for me to understand how and why it's continuing. The evidence for masks being useless is so overwhelming, and in addition with children, the evidence that children are pretty much unaffected by this virus. No healthy children have really suffered any significant consequences compared to, say, colds or flu from this virus. Given those two things, the idea that one would put a child at such risk psychologically and physically for absolutely no benefit using a tool that offers no medical utility is, in my view, a pretty clear example of massive societal level abuse. And I am thoroughly opposed to it. I have been from the beginning, and I will tell parents that they are abusing their children by putting masks on their faces. And I don't hesitate to say it, because I think it needs to be said, and parents need to wake up. And, you know, in my current book that I'm working on, one of the first things that I'm writing as a first step towards moving forward is, as they say in AA, take accountability for the harm you're causing yourself and others. And adults and parents need to start to hold themselves accountable for the injuries that they're causing children and have for the last 2 years, so that they can grieve and apologize and show that they are remorseful in the harm that they are foisting onto the kids of this country. And that's the only way that we're going to be able to let go of this shame. And it is truly a shame, and it's a shameful practice, and it's inexcusable.
Yeah. 100% in agreement. And I've said it many times on this show, confession. That is the only way forward. We've got to confess where we screwed up. We got it wrong. Mm-hmm. And let's confess that, admit to that, ask for forgiveness, and let's start healing. And it's something as basic as a mask. For me, you know, between mask, ivermectin, and this COVID shot, I mean, all three of the main points of controversy, I guess, the mask to me was just so, that was like the no-brainer of the deal. I mean, yeah, there's no science to back it, but, and I've said this before too, my wife, she's she's not a physician, but she's amazing. She's taught me a ton. And I tell her, really, all my patients need to be talking to you because you have wisdom and discernment and spiritual insights on things at a deeper level. But she's also a pretty common sense gal. And one day she's on the mask deal. She said, you know, don't you doctors, when someone's hyperventilating from a panic attack, don't you tell them to cover their face with a brown paper sack or whatever they can to increase their CO2 level because they're blowing all their CO2 off? And I said, well, yeah, you're right, we do. Well, then how hard is it to figure out putting a mask on is going to increase someone's CO2 level? Like, yep, that's right, honey. And that's very common sense. But I actually went to look up a study before that school board meeting where I did, where I quoted you. I went to look up, see, are there any new studies? I'd looked it up, all the old studies before. You know, we're a year and a half into this. I thought, all right, maybe there's something new. Looked up a study out of Germany. The guy had measured in children, school children, the CO2 levels after, I think it was 5 to 7 minutes of breathing with a mask. And he put the CO2 monitor inside the mask. And within just this short period of time, the highest level, I think it was 6 times greater than the designated safe level by the German health authorities. These kids were just, their CO2 levels going up so much. And that study got retracted. And I emailed the author and I asked him, what happened? Why did it get retracted? And his answer was, Ben, this was all political. And it was JAMA Pediatrics. He said, JAMA never...
I read that article.
Yeah, never would tell me why. And I've asked him many times. It's just, that's the kind of craziness that we're up against. And I should probably not use that word with a psychiatrist here, but there's some more
watch
formal...
your words there, Ben.
Yeah. Mass delusional psychosis. So that really just got me more than anything, the mass. So I just want to encourage those parents that might be listening out there. You know, if fear was at the base of your decision to go down that masking road, like we just said, just... confess that you didn't know, you listened to these authorities and powers that be. And if there was harm that came from it, just, you know, let's heal from it. So thank you for addressing that.
Yes.
Let's move into, I guess, if you want to do this, hesitate because it's so controversial and I just don't get it with the COVID shot. And I call it a shot on purpose, like you already alluded to. The word vaccine, the definition of vaccine, is something that gives you immunity. And it was really clear from the get-go, even Pfizer and Moderna told us, this is not going to reduce, it's not designed to prevent you from getting the virus or transmitting it. It's supposed to just reduce your chance of severe illness, your risk of ICU admission and death. That's the real benefit. Well, kids have no benefit, as you said, or no risk of serious hospitalization and death. It's been a little while since I looked at the numbers. I think it was maybe 5 months ago. There was like 380-something children died of COVID in 18 months, in the first 18 months. And normally, year to year, 400 to 600 kids die of influenza. And in the H1N1 in 2011, I think it was, it was like 1,200 children died, and I'm not minimizing those deaths. Those kids were already sick, pre-existing conditions, cancer, they're on hospice or something significant. But 380 some odd deaths in 18 months versus 400 to 600 every year with influenza. So there's no risk. What say you for maybe a parent that's just tuned into our show and hasn't been listening? And they're debating getting this injection for their child because the news, the corporations, the government, and the health professionals are telling them to. What's your thoughts on this shot?
Well, first the harsh response and then the more thoughtful one. The harsh response is if you, as a parent, allow your child to be given this experimental therapeutic product, I'm just going to call it a drug for sake of being efficient in words, then you are knowingly placing your child in unnecessary physical harm and placing him at risk. You are abusing your child, period. Now, it might be through ignorance, it might be through fear, but it is still abuse. It is still placing your child in physical danger. And there's no excuse for it, whatever your intention is. Now, the more thoughtful and sympathetic response, there may be several reasons why you're doing it. One is you might actually think that it's helpful, that it's offering your child protection from an infection. It is not. We know now, even the federal government and the CDC and the FDA have admitted that these drugs do not protect against infection or against the spread of infection. And that's why they're still telling everybody to wear masks no matter how many shots they get. And they're also pushing 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, God knows how many shots eventually, almost like an extended form of medical treatment as opposed to a vaccination, because it's not a vaccine. So we know that they're not effective in terms of reducing transmission, reducing the risk of catching a disease. Are they helpful in reducing the severity of illness or hospitalization or death? There is no evidence to show that, none. What's the risk of a child anyway without getting a shot? Well, the risk that a child will catch this disease is about 100%, just like it is with everyone. And once it's caught, natural immunity forms, and then the disease never recurs. And once that happens, that child now protects everyone around him or her, especially adults, from catching the disease, because the child acts as sort of an end-of-line transmission vector. The virus can no longer reside and spread from a child who has natural immunity. So that's actually a good thing. You want your child to catch this so that your child can then develop immunity and protect other people from transmitting infection. This is a good thing. Children are our best form of herd immunity. It's very hard to develop that when you have a shot, especially this shot. People who have received these shots are struggling to develop natural immunity because their immune systems have been compromised by the effects of the shot. So you're doing a lot of harm to your child, both in limiting his ability to develop natural immunity and limiting his ability to serve as a reservoir of herd immunity by giving him this shot, this drug. You're also putting your child at risk of developing fertility problems, respiratory problems, lung damage, strokes, heart attacks, possibly even death, which is actually provably true. The rates of which these side effects and deaths occur is very hard to calculate because the information has been hidden or obfuscated by the U.S. government. But when you look at other countries like Israel, the rates of myocarditis, which is a chronic and life-threatening heart condition, are 10 to 20-fold higher in young boys who receive these drugs versus those that haven't. You're also seeing lots of very strange problems with young women, with menorrhagia, meaning excessive menstrual bleeding after receiving these shots. I had one in my practice yesterday who is a teenager, and she has been bleeding for weeks on end since she's received this shot. Never had this problem before with her period. Women are having this problem as well, including headaches and difficulties with dizziness and balance. We just don't know ultimately what the end result will be of these drugs in children. There may be lifelong consequences. There may be autoimmune crippling increases of diseases like multiple sclerosis and lupus, perhaps, as I said, infertility issues. We just don't know. So you're really rolling the dice for your child. And most importantly, you're not offering any benefit. You know, one of the basic things about medicine is when you make a medical decision, you have to assess risk, you have to assess benefit. And if there's no benefit, and there's even a small amount of risk, it is unethical to offer that intervention. Absolutely unethical. It cannot be done ethically. So parents out there, if you mistakenly think that there's a medical benefit for this shot, you are mistaken, you are ignorant, you are naive, you need to read more, you need to listen to news sources that provide real medical information. Epic Times has done a great job. Dr. Joseph Mercola is excellent at this. So is Dr. Kurt Millone out of Hawaii, a pediatric cardiologist. Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Pierre Corey, Dr. Simone Gold. There's lots of really good doctors that have data that are irrefutable in terms of the risks and harm and damage to children from the shots. And then secondly, parents, if you don't really know or care about the risks of the shots, but you just feel really uncomfortable with your child not being able to go to school and socially ostracized and you want him to travel, I get it. This is probably the biggest reason why parents are getting these shots. However, think about this. This was supposed to be once and done 6 months ago, 9 months ago. It is clearly not. It is clear that this is going to continue. Booster one is already required at every single major university in California. SC, Scripps, California State University System, UC System. You cannot go to college now unless you get a booster by either this week or next week. It's coming for schools as well, K through 12 around the country. This is not going to end. So you're going to have to place your child at ongoing risk with every additional shot. Every additional shot increases the risk, not just by an additional step, but by a factor, a multiple factor. That's what the data shows. So if it's not going to end and it's going to keep going, it's going to hurt your child, it's not going to benefit your child, what do you do? Well, this is where the rubber meets the road. You're going to either have to buy some time until this whole house of cards collapses, meaning medical or religious exemptions, or you're going to have to pull your kids out of government school and you're going to have to do homeschooling. Or you might have to move, or you might have to go to a private school that doesn't have the mandates. You're going to have to make some painful choices and some sacrifices. But you know what? That's why you're a parent. You're a parent because you are responsible for your child and you made the decision to sacrifice for your child, not the reverse. Children are not meant to sacrifice for the comforts of the adults and the older people. It's the older people and the adults that sacrifice for children. It's always been that way. And you have to keep that in mind. You have to just bite your tongue, grit your teeth, and pay that cost, lose some of that time, be an uncomfortable life and position for the time being until this all passes. Because if you don't, and you cave just for your own comfort, your child's comfort, convenience, money, et cetera, and something happens to your kid now or 5 years or 10 years later, I guarantee you, you will never, ever forgive yourself.
Yeah, it's a hard, hard reality, but that is
it exactly is. It's just the truth.
Yeah.
And it's the reality and the truth.
And it's tough when even their own pediatricians or public health officials locally, county or state health officials encouraging it, of course, celebrities and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it is absolutely, it's tough. But some things are worth standing up for, and our kids' health is definitely one of those. Mm-hmm. In the remaining 10 minutes or so we have here, Dr. McDonald, this mass delusional psychosis, I know the term that Dr. Robert Malone started putting out there from a professor, I think Matthias in Belgium maybe, or somewhere in Europe.
Matthias Desmet, D-E-S-M-E-T, psychologist out of Belgium. And the phrase that Robert Malone used was mass formation psychosis, which is not Desmet's term. It's actually a mishmash of mass formation, which was coined by Matthias Desmet. And the word formation is a synonym for psychosis. And then the phrase that I've been using for the last 2 years, which is mass delusional psychosis. Dr. Malone took both, glued them together, and got mass formation psychosis, which is kind of a redundant phrase and it doesn't exist. And he promoted it on Joe Rogan a few weeks ago, and it's sort of taken off all over the world.
Right. I even saw that Google switched their algorithm. People were Googling that phrase so much, and so they made the algorithm switch to go to Yahoo News and where it all said.
You were correct. Yeah. They actually had a sign up, a response that came up last week for about 24 hours when you typed it in that said, "We're awaiting updates on our results." And there was nothing there. They didn't know what to do because they didn't want all these people to go and watch, God forbid, watch Robert Malone's video on Joe Rogan or Peter McCullough and then actually get informed. Right. So they just took it out. They just took it out of the search engine. And then finally they found some guy out in Dubuque, Iowa, that's got a couple of cats and a podcast with two followers. And they linked all of the results to him. And he basically said, Robert Malone is a kook and a bad doctor. What an absurd, I'm laughing even now because it's almost like some sort of a comic book strip that I'm reading, but this actually happened. You can look it up. It's actually in the news. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely crazy. But so I want to give you,
so what's your question? Sorry.
The question
the preamble
is,
there.
kind of walk through that a little bit, explain to people, because I think people still struggle with how could the whole world be marching to this beat of this drum of not the truth. And then what's the way out, I guess? Let's end positive too. So maybe just reiterate sort of how can the whole world, including doctors, be marching this way? And what do you see as far as the future and a way out of this?
Well, you have to remember that this isn't new. We were not living a rational life free of involvement, of collusion and conspiracy and propaganda until March of 2020. There have been periods throughout history where people have all gone crazy at the same time. I mean, look at the Salem witch trials. Throw her in the water. You know, if she drowns, she's innocent. If she floats, she's a witch, and then you can burn her. And this was actually a psychotic mass, as Desmond would say, mass formation, meaning that all of the people all at the same time fell prey to this irrational belief that they had witches in their midst. And it was actually accomplished by women pooling their paranoia together and their anger and contempt for younger women who were, in their view, seducing their husbands to punish them, but without actually expressing the idea that we want to punish women who are seducing their husbands. So they called them witches, and then they had the social support of trying them and executing them. And this is very similar to what's happened now. We have people running around saying, you don't wear a mask, you don't want to get a shot, you're a bad person, so you deserve to die. You deserve to be thrown out in the woods and left to the elements and to suffer from death through exposure. This is what the left-wing philosopher Noam Chomsky wrote and spoke about a month ago. And just 2 days ago, a guy named, I think it's Hicklix, I can't remember his first name now. He's a LA Times columnist. And he interviewed me last year, actually, about these masks. He wrote in the LA Times, pretty well-known publication, just a couple of days ago, that people who die of presumably the coronavirus, who haven't received these shots, deserve their death and deserve to be laughed at and mocked for their stupidity in not getting a shot. He called it ghoulishness that is well deserved. This is really sick. This is beyond sadism. This is sociopathic. It's truly evil. It's disgusting. And this is what has driven things like the witch trials. It's driven the obviously genocides, exterminations of the Jews in Europe, the communist attacks against counter-revolutionary thought in China. We do have periods where government, industry, media have all colluded together in the 20th century and the prior centuries to organize mob-like mentality that is depraved, that is sadistic, that is physically destructive and psychologically damaging. So for people in March of 2020 to all converge onto this irrational platform of virus, masks, antisocial distancing, closing businesses, schools, and shots, is not an unheard of pathway. It's just simply something that's taken on a form that is contemporary. But the script is really the same. I believe that fear is the large driving force and fuel for the mass hysteria, the mass delusional psychosis. Without fear, it never could have gotten off the ground. The car could have never left the driveway. People would have just sort of shrugged their shoulders and said, well, this is kind of inconvenient. You know, maybe we have to be a little more careful until we figure out what's going on. But soon enough, it was obvious that nothing's going on medically of any concern, and then everybody would have gone back to their business. But because they were afraid, and they were told to be afraid, and they were told that those who weren't afraid are actually the enemy, and you need to go after them, it created a really nasty us versus them situation. And people, families, communities started to turn on one another. And they're still doing it, even now. So how do you solve something like this? You know, what do you do? How do you move forward? Well, my suggestion is, first of all, we have to really own up to and acknowledge that we're afraid. Just like the drug addict has to say, you know what, my name is David and I'm an alcoholic. Well, you've got to say that you are David and you are addicted to fear. You have to acknowledge the problem and you have to own up to it before you can do anything about it. We also have to start to turn towards each other and realize that our neighbors, our parents, our friends, our family are not the enemy. Our enemy is actually up above. And I don't mean God. I mean federal government. I mean big corporations. I mean media. These are the people. These are the groups that are actually sicking us on one another so that we don't pay attention to what's actually happening in government, in media, and in business. And then they can, you know, basically rob the loot and run away with all of the profits and take away our rights in the process. So the answer is not staying at home, nor is the answer waiting for a savior to come and fix things for us. The answer is to turn towards ourselves and our other people in our midst, and from a grassroots level, rise up and take our lives back. Demand truth, accountability, rationality, face your own fears, encourage others to do the same, and throw the bums out. We have to own our own decisions and our actions as citizens. We are not here to just sit around and wait for Postmates to deliver us another Frappuccino and let someone else vote. We cannot function and survive as a society if we continue like this much longer. We have to go back to our roots. We have to go back to individualism, accountability, honesty, truth, and real, sincere debate and criticism instead of this fear-mongering and mocking and shaming and sloganeering. I know that's a lot, and I know that's not easy for anybody to swallow, but this is sort of the big picture of how I see things getting better.
No, I agree. Time for a gut check. Got to be some big changes in the way we think, the way we live, the way we act. Yeah. And that confession is huge too. And I just want to remind people, I mean, it is a collusion between these big, big things, big media, the government, and even unfortunately our healthcare agencies. I've been just listening to you reminded me of that Peter Daszak quote about, I'm going to basically paraphrase, but we need to get a pan-influenza or a pan-coronavirus vaccine going. And basically we need an emergency to get the public to go along. Here it is. A key driver is the media, and the economics follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get the real issues. And investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process. I mean, there yes. is a huge part of this whole thing is money, power and money, mm-hmm. and these institutions that have lots of power and money. And to think that these human beings couldn't be fallible and couldn't want to manipulate through fear, manipulate people for a profit. I mean, it's clear. The evidence is there.
It is.
So I encourage everybody, get the book, United States of Fear. It's a great read. Dr. Mark McDonald, and again, be looking for his new book coming out. Y'all can follow him. His new website, dissidentmd.com. Also, you can look him up on Substack, where he's putting out an article every week. Just type in his name, Dr. Mark McDonald, MD, and you will see that there. Dr. McDonald, thank you. It's been a great hour. It flew by.
Thanks, Ben. I enjoyed it.
For all your information and for your encouragement. And just thank you for fighting the good fight, especially for the kids.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, everybody. That was another great show, I think. Awesome. I really enjoyed it. Y'all come back next week. We will have another great show. And remember, you can find the recording on veritasmedical.com on the archive page or on You're the Cure on iTunes podcast. Y'all come back next week. Thank y'all for joining us today. Bye-bye.